From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Welcome, everybody, to our final episode of 2017 and an update, week 35 of our career tracker. So excited that you're with us today. If you have not been following along with this project, oh man, we are deep into it. This is week 35 of an endless project called the Career Tracker, where we check in with the same four filmmakers every 7 weeks of their career to see what has changed. Because you'll be shocked. 7 weeks goes by, and it feels like, oh boy, that was the blink of an eye. But your whole world can have changed. Sophie Alkezian's here. Hey, Sophie.
Hi.
7 weeks changed your life? I mean, you got a new podcast launched in the last
seven weeks. Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a really good 7 weeks.
Yeah, we launched a new podcast as we're recording this a week ago, Crazy in Bed. Pick it up now on the latest podcast, apps, anywhere
Subscribe.
You find a podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, all
rate,
that good
review.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, we spent a lot of the last 7 weeks sort of plotting and planning and coordinating that launch. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know, when you take that project in particular, 7 weeks ago, I don't think we had a launch plan that all came together in the last 7 weeks.
That's true. Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
That's
pretty
true.
Wild. And our final career tracker of 2017. So we're going to see how all of our folks rounded out their year, what goals they set up at the beginning, and how they met them up as 2017 comes to a close. Our guest today, Sean Weiner. Hey, Sean.
Hi.
Former guest on this show, back again. We didn't have you on last week. You weren't able to make our book club meeting.
I'm so sorry.
No.
I can't read.
Is that what it was?
Well, here it is.
You certainly had some opinions for somebody who can't read.
I can't lie, and I can't read.
Ooh, man. We read, I don't know if you listened, we read some of your hot takes on the episode.
I tracked through. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I tried to, like, get up there. And, I heard a couple of them.
We saw a couple of them. They were good takes, man.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting. If for those who didn't tune in, we just read The Director's Six Senses, which I think you're on the same side as most everybody on that panel.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best book in the world. And I was very curious to get your thoughts as somebody who works in a film education space about the value, because I don't know. I guess part of it to me feels like I'm a little bit tainted by my own background.
Mm-hmm.
But as like a 101 tool, it's not the worst tool. It might not be the first book I go to, but it's not the, you know, if you were just picking up film, if you were 16, if you were like, you know, like, how do I get off my ass and like do something?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the worst tool in the world.
Do I have to respond?
You don't agree?
There's worse tools in that you could read a book that's not about filmmaking.
Okay. Or you could read a book that's so dated that it doesn't apply. Like,
right.
I've picked up film books that
right.
are like,
and it's just telling you
how to cut on a Steenbeck.
Yeah.
And you're like, no relevance. No relevance at all.
I think, you know what, though? I guess from a film education point of view, it's more that I kind of hold precious that how you learn about it first. And so it's like, yes, it's good fundamentals, or there are some fundamentals in there, I guess. But it feels like a really missed opportunity to start people off on the right foot.
Sure.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
It's easier to also like be very critical when you're like feverishly tapping out your anger on the,
right.
you know, I mean, you don't have to be the one to read it in front of a video camera. So
the reason why Facebook is like the hottest place for, you know, just like throwing opinions around ever.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to sit at a computer and type it out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put your voice behind it, stand behind it, look at anybody. You can just throw it right out there. Well, glad to have you in for this week. Hopefully your opinions are just as hot.
No, yeah, and I'm glad to be here. I mean, you guys got me here because you said this is like, Michael Apted's 7-Up series?
That's
which
right.
is, you know, for most people, they'd be like, huh? For me, I was like, go on.
Well, you know, and our opinion here on this show is that Michael Apted is lazy as hell.
Yeah, he needs to work more frequently.
Yeah.
Every 7 years? Fuck that, man.
Let's see every shaving cycle of this character.
I will say we have seen quite a change in our career trackers over 35 weeks. You know, this was like April, I think, we first started this. And it is remarkable to sort of see the difference between what they were doing then and what they're doing now. I wonder for you, because we last checked in an excellent interview. If you haven't listened to it yet, y'all go back in the archives, listen to Sean's episode, because we were just at the kickoff of the new round of Creative Control.
Creative Culture.
See?
It's okay.
What's progressed there? What's progressed there? What's progressed on the job? Like, what's new with you since then?
Yeah, I mean, with so in very short description, Creative Culture is just like a kind of continued senior thesis experience. So basically we bring in short film projects at this place I work at called the Jacob Burns Film Center. And together, about eight folks each produce their individual short films over the course of a five-month session. And then we try to get those films out there and into festivals. And in the past few weeks, 7 weeks, I guess we could still use that, we, from our pilot class, one of our films was officially accepted into Sundance Film Festival.
That's great.
So that is the big, that was our big goal to, you know, down the line in a few years, hopefully we can get into Sundance. And we got there in a year, and now we have to have bigger goals.
Man.
So that's really exciting. And
that's really exciting.
And we have another group of folks in right now. They just, almost all of them just finished their production cycle. So we're going into post-production through January, and then we'll put those films out into festivals.
Awesome.
And, it keeps on churning. It's actually cool. It's I think the other thing is, like, when you build something like that, you start to see, you start to butt up against. So we're not solely comedy. So we're like butting up against certain circles in the New York film scene that, you know, aren't that far away, but they feel very far away when you're starting out. So one of our filmmakers, Emily Ann Hoffman, was shooting her live-action film this past weekend, and she was, her DP was the gaffer for Good Time, which was a film this summer that was really amazing looking. And as if you sort of know how filmmaking works, often the gaffer is like the person who's dreaming of being a cinematographer.
Yeah.
And so, like, you're starting to see, like, oh, if that's where we're playing, right, is with, like, the folks who are the, you know, next years or in a couple years, the great kind of DPs and folks. So it's cool to, like, make those connections and see where they go.
That's very cool, man. And I think for you personally, too, it felt like you, when we last talked, you had sort of had a little bit of a career evolution for yourself, taking a little bit less of a drive towards, like, looking for directing opportunities and being sort of like Sean, the creative producer, sort of like coming to the fore. Has that continued? How's that evolution been for you?
Yeah.
In what has also been a transitionary year in terms of, like, your mindset towards the industry?
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, my new, like, autobiography is called Be the Supporting Actor in Your Life, right? It's not always about the hero's journey.
Okay.
And so, creative producing and mentoring kind of eight different projects is really creatively fulfilling. And and also selecting and kind of, how do I say it? Like, to the chagrin of many of the people in the program, I think about it a lot like sports. And so I'm like equal parts talent scout and coach. Both those things are really exciting, right? It's really fun to go out to a film festival and see all the shorts programs and kind of say, like, oh, well, who's right there and who can I invite in and work with and see if we can help realize their voice. And it also starts to create a real network. I mean, I'm thinking about the barbecues I'm gonna have in the future, and they're gonna be dope.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, who's at your barbecue? I'm going to be like, I knew them when.
Awesome. That's exciting, man. So it sounds like it sounds like things continue to go well in that program, and it's continued to find fulfillment for yourself.
Yeah.
And also, I know that you were sort of like fencing that LA thing. You're pretty rooted at this point.
I'm pretty rooted. Yeah, we've got, like, Trulia on our phones and Zillow, you know? Like, that means we're going to, like, buy a house in 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if I'm looking at that stuff.
At least monitor prices.
Or at least think about it. If I'm thinking about that so much.
Oh,
yeah,
that's great.
No, I mean, I think it's, there's always a possibility, but I think I like this part of the country more, so
awesome.
Let's hang out here.
Exciting. Well, exciting stuff, and excited that you are here today. You ready to dig into it with our career trackers? All right. As always, we're drinking a Bronx beer as we listen back here. We're sipping on the No Resolutions India Pale Ale. This is definitely the highest alcohol by volume in the Bronx catalog.
It's a theme when I'm here, because I think you said that last time with whatever.
This one is even higher. They sent us they heard that and they said, we need to send you guys a new one that tops that.
You got Sean on the show? I got one for you. You got Sean coming up?
Exactly. And also, we want to make sure we get the hottest take. So by the time we get to the end of this, when that beer goes down, Sean's takes are going to get hotter and hotter. So excited for that. Thanks to the Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. And check out The Bronx Brewery for all of their excellent craft beer selections, including this No Resolutions IPA, which I believe you can find right now at the UCB East. I saw this down there last weekend. So a very delicious beer, and thanks to them for hooking us up. All right, let's dig into it. When we last checked in with our good buddy Mehdi Barakchian, who you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mehdi had just found out his release date for Passport Control, the show that when we first started back in week zero, he said, if I don't have this show and meetings for TV within a year, I'm giving it up. Not only did he get those meetings, he got a pilot on Brick TV, part of the Brick TV pilot competition that's been going on this fall. The voters on YouTube are deciding which pilot Brick picks up for more episodes. And so the premiere was about to come out. We were going to find out whether or not the show had been picked up. Let's check back in where Mehdi was in week 28.
We did shoot the pilot.
All right.
We shot it. It was fucking hard. It was really hard, man. It was stressful.
The last month has been, you know, a slow going back and forth of emails and coordinating social. But we did have to do some post on the on the edit.
You did that too.
We learned a lot.
Yeah. And how about Idol Worship? Any update there?
Yeah, we premiered at Williamsburg International Film Festival.
International Williamsburg Film Festival.
Well,
yeah, wow.
Well, what they do is they accept films from all over the world. But we screened, and it was so fucking cool to see our movie on a big, because it was a big screen. It was like a legit theater.
So those were the updates from week 28.
Mm.
He's got his film coming out. He's got his show coming out. We also check in with him about his wedding, which is coming up,
too.
He's got a lot of stuff going on. Let's check in. Mehdi from week 35.
So, yeah, that's what it's been. It's been getting the pilot out and learning what their strategy was for what the use of the pilot is and what it means for the potential for series. So we learned a week out from when it finally ended up airing, which I can't even tell you what date it was now because it changed so many times. I think it was like November 12th or something, or 13th.
Okay.
The week before, we found out that they're just going to be pulling numbers from YouTube, specifically likes on the video.
Hmm.
So we had to change our marketing to point toward the YouTube link, which is so hard to do on Facebook or on Instagram or other places, and to get people to like it. So our focus is on that and for setting up screenings and for doing Facebook Live and just promotion and cutting small clips and putting those up daily and having those point to specific points within the YouTube clip because it's a 30-minute clip.
Mm-hmm.
And you want people to look at a sketch or have them feel like they got to see just a sketch without having to watch a whole 30-minute thing, so we'd have to point to a specific minute. So it's been a lot of figuring out complicated marketing and how to get people to see it as much as possible.
Do you have an answer on whether or not they're going to make more at this point, or where is that project at?
I don't. Okay. And you know what? So the whole thing was that they said what's going to happen is we're going to let Brooklyn decide which one they think should go to series, and then we're going to take that into consideration.
Okay.
And the way they're going to let Brooklyn decide is based on how many likes the YouTube video got. If our video was 5 minutes long, I'd be like, great, we got this in the bag. We had a 30-minute video. And at the end of the day, it says it's going to help them decide. And I was like, we're going to push real hard. We're going to try real hard to get the likes that we can. But there's only so much we can really do to get the likes on it for a 30-minute talk show. And we ended with the second most likes from the five pilots they released.
All right.
And that is the end of that. You know, I have no idea what the next thing is. But because I knew that we were going to come in second place, because what happened is the one that came in first place actually had really good, had a couple of tweets from people with large followings, and that bumped them the couple times that got them there. And I was like, all right, well, we know we're not going to win this, and we're not going to pay for views. We're not going to do any of that because you know what, Nate, we could have thrown $150 at it.
Right. Yeah, you could have.
Could have called our friends in another country and had a bunch of people clicking the like button on it. But we didn't do that. And instead, we just focused on the content of it. And a last-minute idea that I had that ran by some of the members of our team was to make a video directed directly to the two executive producers in charge, the head of programming and the executive producer.
Yeah.
Just being a straight-to-camera, hey, welcome to my home. Here are a bunch of reasons why you should take us a series. And we shot that video, sent it to them the day the voting was closing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, listen, if you want to meet, let us know. And we have a meeting with them now. So this coming Monday, we'll have a meeting with them, and that'll give us an idea of what that means for Passport Control.
Sure.
Feeling positive.
Okay.
Because it's hard to get a meeting with these guys. In general, it's slow responses, but they were quick to reply and were coming on Monday.
Cool. What else has sort of bubbled up, or what else have you been working on?
Yeah. Most of my time really has gone to that marketing and strategizing it. It took surprisingly more time than I thought it would. Auditions have picked up, which is really cool. Because through the summer, it was kind of quiet, and I was getting kind of nervous and antsy about it. I ended up booking another commercial.
Great.
Which I'm really stoked about. and I shot that in Boston 2 weeks ago. And I feel great about that because it's been a while since I booked the commercial. I was starting to sweat. And I was like, I got to go back to Career Tracker and not going to have anything now. But I've been pretty busy outside of the marketing with just auditions in general. Like today before coming here, what is it, like 12? I had two this morning.
Cool.
I mean, I like kind of can't believe what a crazy and also like positive year it was.
Yeah.
It's kind of outrageous to think back that, you know, we put this team together at the beginning of the year and shot a fucking pilot.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe that happened. And that was just, I mean, it's got to be because the content was good, the team was good and everything, but it feels like I was like, it's got to happen. I, like, forced it.
Yeah.
You know? It feels like a really successful year. I learned so much about patience and how it works to talk with a network, and also learned why so many networks I talk to, why they do have, and other producers and stuff, why they do have a sense of, like, all right, so what idea do you have? All right, like the conversation's always kind of slow. It's because everything just takes so long to make that everyone just kind of moves at that pace for some reason.
Yeah.
How to work with a team and keep them positive and motivated, and how to work with a lot of different personalities, and how to give up some of my authority on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like on the shoot day, I had to, like, you know, be like, all right, to my other producer, Maury Monterubio, I was like, you can make these decisions, and that's hard for me to do. I'm just so anal and specific, so I learned about doing that. It's a really difficult thing to do because you have, like anybody else, anyone who's listening who has, like, these creative babies, this thing that you really want to make that you feel so passionately about, and you want to see that thing succeed, but everyone tells you it's not that idea, it's the next idea. That's kind of, like, what I wanted to set myself up with going into this project. I was like, if it doesn't do it in 6 months, I'm going to let go of it.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so many projects that I really care about come so close and not make it that I was like, I got to start treating them as such.
Yeah. Now, the other things that we had talked about a little bit in here were, like, idol worship.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
Great. We were at, is it Yofi or Yo-Fi Film Festival?
Oh, the Yo-Fi.
We did the Yonkers.
The Yonkers.
Yeah. We went all the way to Yonkers.
That's right.
But beyond that, Idol's kind of where it is now. Idol is doing a great job of serving as a calling card, as a proof of concept for, like, what myself and Devin, the writer-director, are capable of creating with our team. Maury Monterubio, who also produced on the Passport Control, was our producer on that, and Amy Bianco. It's like great, like, proof of, like, look, this is what we have as a creative team. This is what we can come back with given X amount of budget. It ended up being something that we're utilizing now for traction on another project that Devin's already started to run with and already has, you know, some real interest in terms of, like, financing and the script, and some large festivals have already talked to him about it.
Great.
So that's been a springboard, kind of like we were just talking about how, like, one project, what's the next one, has, you know, lent itself to a larger opportunity.
Yeah.
Working on Passport Control, I got really used to having a team. And it's real easy to have a really talented team and say, you know, here's kind of what we're going for. What do you guys got? And people come with these brilliant ideas that are fully formed and are fully written and just, you know, need a little bit of back and forth, you know? So remembering to write for myself, because that's a skill, like, that's important and necessary, because you don't always have a team and you should know how to fuck to do that.
Yeah.
Is one thing. I have a lofty goal of, like, wanting to book a network show of some kind to, like, because I've hit all the under fives. Not all the under fives. I've hit, like, two or three under fives.
Yeah.
But to me, that feels like I've hit the character that doesn't have a name, but it's just a profession,
sure,
like doctor or editor or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to get, my goal for next year is to get a role that, like, has a character arc in an episode.
You going to do pilot season?
I'm not going to go there for pilot season.
You're not going to go?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
It's, you know, I'm getting married next year.
Right.
You know, Jamie and I have things to focus on, and I can't do that, I think. I think in the time that it takes. And also, you know what? If it really calls for it, then I'll cross that bridge. But right now, it's kind of pompous of me to be like, yeah, I'm going to go to L.A. for pilot season. Well, I saw, like, you know, a bunch of auditions this year. That's not a reason to go.
Yeah.
Like, our hard and fast rule has always been you go to L.A. when L.A. asks you to come out to it.
Sure.
Not just to go out there and be like, I made it. I'm here.
Well, it sounds like it had a good year. Excited to see what the future holds, too. Thanks, Mehdi, for doing this.
Thanks a lot, man.
So that's Mehdi week 35 in a much more... in a much calmer state than he was week zero, I would say. He came into this project guns blazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like he said, he was like, I'm going to force this thing through no matter what happens. And he's achieved a lot of it. And I also think that he's seen how the process sort of works. I mean, some of what he's talking about doesn't feel like a crossover much with, like, the world that you want to be in. Mm. Because he's talking about, like, this sort of, like, trying to get stuff through in TV. Mm-hmm. I think you've drifted more towards film. But he's also talking about, like, what that world and having a film in festivals is offering him.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how, like, as somebody who, like, is participant in sort of, like, helping to support and shape people's careers and career paths in the film industry, how any of that tact sort of, like, jives with, like, the best practices that you're picking up or, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to listen to him because it's like there's half of – I mean, he's great. And I also, like, remember Mehdi from – you know, what's great about the UCB community is that you meet a lot of people and then you're – that you might meet only like two times, but you know, I know Jamie and I know, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you're like, oh, yeah. Right. And like when I see Mehdi on a commercial, yeah. when I'm watching TV, I'm like, look over to Emily. I'm like, hey, that's Mehdi. It's like, right. I've only met the guy twice, but he's a great guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of, you know, his ambitions and all that stuff are in like such a good place. And he's so clearly, and I'd say that his work is, one of the big things for me and with the film industry, I imagine it's true of TV, but maybe less so, is like social impact content, right? And making sure that it makes sense, like why this film or why this story today.
Sure.
And his stuff definitely hits that. And so, but then there's other things that he's mentioning, like getting however many likes on his video that just drives me insane. I like, it's like, why do we have to like bleep bloop fit the algorithm that whatever, and who cares, right? And that's like so hard to stomach when you put a lot of you know, it's still hard to think, like, I don't know how to say it, like everything, it's not, obviously it's not a meritocracy. You gotta know people or you gotta win sure. the prize or whatever sometimes to like get the exposure or like step out into the spotlight. But sometimes when you do a lot of work and it comes down to like how many people are gonna click a thumbs up icon, it's right. like it's gotta be disenchanting. And like, and I think he persevered through that. You know, he's, and clearly also, maybe this is gonna date me as a reference, but nobody remembers Jesse Camp. But Dave Holmes is still working, okay? So when you think about like the guys who want to be a VJ, the second place guy is a guy who had a career. So, you know, good on Mehdi
solid
for...
Solid reference right there. Solid reference.
Good on Mehdi for... good on Mehdi for reaching out and yeah. doing that. Because in truth, like, they'll see that he is the second, that project is the one with the second amount of likes. And also, they know it's bullshit. Like, they know sure. that, like, they just created some kind of a system and then they have to live by it.
Well,
so.
you know what I think that is? Like, what I think that system is. I mean, Brick is, like, Brick ultimately, right? That's Brooklyn's public access.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the public access right now, especially in this environment, is, like, trying to figure out where the fuck they live,
right.
you know? They know, like, cable's dying. They know, and the government's against them, for
mm-hmm.
damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those channels have to figure out. And also, the internet has eaten up all of the things that, like, it used to be if you wanted to do something weird and you wanted a little support, you'd go to public access to, like, mm-hmm. get it on.
Mm-hmm.
Or that was a more viable option because people would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that is even in doubt. And I think good on Brick, because what they did was they seeded a bunch of projects. They gave them, like, you know, not a ton of money, but like four or five projects. Like, they gave some money to those uh-huh. pilots and tried to create a little Amazon pilot season thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably the YouTube likes is just the most, you know, the most tangible way
right.
for them to, like, quantify how do we get eyeballs on what we're doing,
right.
sort of like the, you know, people watching on cable and seeing those ratings. So I get the game that they're trying to play there.
Right.
I also completely agree with you that it's arbitrary and that ultimately, you know, those evaluators or any other partner for that project or for Mehdi going forward is going to look at the quality of the work.
Right.
As opposed to how many upvotes it got on YouTube.
Right, from not necessarily Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, mm-hmm. I guess that's and it's really interesting to think, like, what is public access in Brooklyn now, and how do you create a show that actually appeals to all the, like,
yeah.
both the sort of longstanding communities and the gentrifying communities. Like, there is, honestly, Mehdi's show might be a show that would talk to all communities in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Really cool to think yeah. about, right? Folks who could buy in on, you know, yeah, like kind of like exploring kind of discrimination and the way in which, you know, media represents folks. And, you know, like it's all in there.
Here's a question for you. In terms of like Mehdi's approach, right? Because when like talking to him over the course of this project, he has said that his main goal has been to like be working as an actor and to not do so much producing. Mm-hmm. And yet he spent so much of this year doing something that required him to, you know, he was on camera and that's why he did it. But he also was sort of like the lead, you know, he was basically show running that project, mm-hmm. which had a lot of producerial like, you know, tasks associated with it. Mm-hmm. And it's been laser focused on that like one thing, mm-hmm. right? One thing that he's really taking on heavily and then doing the audition, you know, the audition game, commercial, legit, whatever he can get to sort of like supplement, you know, his income as well as his sort of like experience for the year. Mm-hmm. In terms of like the approach that like it's not necessarily the same as like filmmakers that you're working with, but in terms of that, how much of like what you talk to with the folks that you work with or your mindset towards the industry is it like have one project that you're like really proud of and push it and like keep some other stuff to the side, or is it about having a lot of balls in the air?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've got a million balls in the air at all times.
Right.
And there wouldn't be one project that I'd be like throw myself 100% into.
Yeah, you know, I'm the folks that I'm working with are folks who are on the cusp of making they're folks who have been generating a lot of short films and then need to have a pitch deck of a feature at their disposal. So a lot that being said, a lot of times when I meet these folks, they're folks who have made one good short film and are just looking to make another good short film and hopefully make it better.
Sure.
So it's not a very long trajectory, but over the course of a year, they go from what that latter thing I mentioned to the previous. So, you know, I work with folks that make two short films back to back. So that's a pretty quick turnaround. But like my experience here in digital, like that quick turnaround is good because you get reps in and you get better. And if you're working with the right people, you get to really hone in on like, oh, that's what I do best. I can keep doing that. I can explore that in a deeper way. But kind of like after one or two, and this is, you know, it's tricky, right? Because you hope that those films get some regard. But after one or two shorts, it's like, well, what am I? Am I a short filmmaker? And if I'm a short filmmaker, then I'm another job that makes money, and sure. then I make short films for the rest of my life, right? It's not like that's not a career path. That's like an entry thing. So, so I think the balls in the air become starting to think larger about what that feature is,
sure,
and figuring out how to get that feature off the ground. And a lot of the folks I work with wind up turning that feature into a short as a proof of concept, and then we work that proof of concept. And to be honest, turning a feature into a short is a really interesting exercise because it's not that you're trying to shoot a scene of your feature. It's not that you're trying to cram that feature into a short because that's ridiculous. It's that you're trying to create like an 8 to 12 minute film that feels like your feature. And so so it's really interesting to think about that because you wind up creating something that's probably never – that thing won't appear in your feature. But when somebody watches it, they're going to be like, oh, this is really good. I'd love to see a feature sure. version of this.
I think – interestingly, I think the same thing is happening with what is called web series and television.
Mm-hmm.
That – there are so many opportunities now that are about generating a digital short form show for which what you're essentially doing is you're trying to tell a great story, trying to set up a great, you know, scenario, characters, jokes, if it's whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But like trying to set up that world in a way that like is excellent in this form, but that ultimately goes, that could be half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Broad City, mm-hmm. right? Like,
sure.
Ultimately, like, that idea, there are so many places now that are like, we'll give you a little bit of money
mm-hmm.
to go do that thing in short form. And it needs to be good, and it needs to succeed under the metrics of digital.
Yeah.
But also, let's have the mindset towards the runway the longer form piece.
What are the web series? Because, like, when I think about short film to feature, I think about Half Nelson, Short Term 12, Pariah, Whiplash, right? Those are all short films that then turned into major features.
Sure.
And when you look at them, it's fascinating. Like, if you're interested in making short films or a feature or whatever, look at make that comparison because they're different. They're all different from each other, but you're like, oh, I see what happened there. So you have like Broad City, you kind of have High Maintenance, except High Maintenance just maintained its form and said, we'll just smack two episodes together and call that half an hour. What are the other examples that have kind of like done that?
Comedy Central had another one. It's another one that's like they're like babysitters. I can't remember what it was called. Sophie, do you remember what this was called?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember the name.
Guys,
of it
sounds memorable.
Yeah. I mean, it had a season. It went that way. Brockmire is the best example of short form to long form right now because Brockmire was like a one short Funny or Die, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like sketch from a few years ago. And then they sort of like developed it out at IFC.
Mm-hmm.
It had different reasons why it got picked up too, right? Like attachment of pretty significant stars and Funny or Die's like background. But like that's another example. I say similarly, like, right, Drunk History was like embedded inside of the Funny or Die Presents show and then and online and went that way. Yeah. Adam Ruins Everything, same thing.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Like there is
Jimmy Fallon's celebrity lip sync.
Sure. I guess that was on TV. But,
yeah.
No, but I think
but ultimately, yes, it is. It's a bit that becomes
a
larger piece. I mean, and I think that like everybody wants that. I think that you hear a lot of conversations that are like, how do we do that? I don't think that there's a ton of super successful, you know, approaches there. Broad City's definitely the most successful.
And Broad City's
way.
Wildly, I mean, I remember when it first came out and then I was like, oh, well, I have to see the web series. And then I watched the web series and I think it's a good web series, but it is basically like a wildly kind of visceral, kind of exciting, messy, rough around the edges experience where you're like, wow, this is, I'm just kind of like hyped up. Yeah. Like, it's not that it's, you know, that it transformed massively before it got to TV.
Massively, yes.
But I guess, you know, what you're saying is interesting to me because it's like, it almost seems like there's two things. And one of them is really true to film and probably both to what Mehdi's doing and to how film works, which is like, this is a unique voice with a unique perspective on the world. And I'd like to see what their brain comes up with next. Right. And that's like, this is a filmmaker or this is a voice that I want to invest in. And then the other thing is potentially the thing that we're talking more about when we're talking about web series of TV, which is this is a just add water bit that I bet we could rinse and repeat for indefinitely and it would be fun if it expanded. And so it's like, it might be, I don't know if this is like cynical, but it might be important to think about that when you're coming up with an idea. Am I creating like a formula, which I don't think is a bad word. I think that's a good word in comedy, but am I creating like a casing that then like becomes a really fun thing that people want to watch again and again and becomes a really good entity to sell? Or am I putting myself out there as like, you've never seen something like this before. Here's who I am. And here's how I'm telling my story this time, and here's how I'm telling it that time, but you know it's me both times, and you'd like to see what I make next. Which is harder, I think, but to a certain extent, that's also the romantic ideal of where we all dream of being. Or maybe it's just me.
No, I think that's fair. I think ultimately, in this business, it's a lot of like wanting to tell the stories that you want to tell. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In whatever form that takes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the ideal of the business is.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely takes a lot to get there, right?
Yeah.
That's not an easy road to hoe.
I'd also say that like maybe we're going too far off tangent, but I feel like that's my job when I come here.
Yeah.
I also feel like there's something to be said for not if you make too many things back to back to back to back. You might lose it. And I think that there's a way in which sometimes in this, like, very disposable, it's cheap for me to make this thing. If I just get everybody together this weekend, I can make it. And you know what? That one was good. But if I just get everybody together next weekend, I can make it. That you're moving so fast that you might not give yourself the time to evolve as a storyteller. And so I think we all should value the thing we make, the one thing, a little bit more and for a little bit longer before we make the next thing. Because I actually think that you wind up like undercutting a lot of your work.
I can dig that. Cool. That's only the first one.
Hey!
We got three more to go.
Strap in. Hour one.
There's a ride coming.
It's been 35 minutes.
Sorry.
Let's travel 3,000 miles for our next career tracker and check in with our good buddy Marla Black out in Los Angeles. Now, when we started this project, Marla probably, of all of our career trackers, has undergone the biggest sort of like adjustment to where her most tangible goals are, right? And she's also the one who hates talking about her most tangible goals the most in this project. Marla, when we first started, was working as an executive assistant. She was a development assistant for a while. She was like working in a production capacity in the television business in Los Angeles. Hell, she worked at UCB for a little while she was on this show as an assistant. And those projects all came to an end. A couple of shows she worked on didn't get picked up. The assistant job that she had at UCB sort of changed directions from a development standpoint. She got a job that is a great opportunity for her because she was trying to transition into the writer's room as a writer's assistant, but it never has translated into getting into a writer's room. It's just a writer's assistant to a writer. But doors have started to open as an actor to Marla. She's been open to that opportunity, and she's been walking through those doors. When we last checked in with her, she got up at The Moth. She had gotten cast in a CBS procedural show in something that was like a multi-day thing. And the goal she set for herself was, I want to have some health insurance in 7 weeks when I talk to you next from SAG. Let's check in with how Marla was doing 7 weeks ago, week 28.
It's been pretty standard, just doing my part-time work still and writing a lot. Okay. I'm finishing up a couple of things for SEAL Team because that's on next week. I've been auditioning a little bit, mostly for commercials, and then writing for myself, yeah, on my own project. One thing I realized is I did book SEAL Team, and that's been really exciting, and I was thrilled and got into the union. But, yeah, once you do it, it's kind of like, okay, we're back to where we started again. Now what? There were a couple of jobs I missed out on that I was really upset about, like super bummed. And now I look back and I think about the things that wouldn't have happened had I got that job, which are more in line with what I actually want.
Open to new experiences. Let's see where the last 7 weeks have taken her. Let's check in. Marla Black, week 35.
Well, the last 7 weeks, I guess I got put on hold for one more role, which I don't think I got because it's coming to the end of the
okay.
But I also got an agent, so that was good.
Oh, awesome! So the bulk of the time, have you been doing a lot of auditioning? Is that like been like a lot of how your time has been spent?
Yeah, workload has been auditioning and writing, and then I also escaped off to Costa Rica, which didn't work, but
took a little vacay.
Yeah, a little vacay.
That's great. And how did the agent come about?
Getting put on hold for another network show kind of brought the agent a calling.
So it was sort of like an inbound call then. It wasn't an outbound call. It was, hey, I heard this. Let's get together.
Yeah.
Rad.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Which is awesome going into pilot season to have somebody on your team. Still too early to tell because he legitimately signed me and then I got on a plane to Liberia.
Okay.
Which all good clients do, right?
Yeah.
Cool. You're signing me? I'm out.
Has there been any day job stuff going on in the mix? Or the last time we talked, you were still doing the writer's assistant thing?
That's petered off, really. So, yeah, I'm just kind of being a full-time creative at the moment.
Rad.
Yeah. I finished one script and I'm getting some notes on it. So I'll go into rewrites over the holidays. Even while I was in Costa Rica, I connected with like an old actor friend and we talked about making something together. So we'll see how that goes. I feel like when we started talking, you hit it the nail right on the head. It was very much dependent on being a cog in these amazing big projects. And as it's coming to an end, I feel like it's changed course in very surprising ways by booking work and getting an agent. And even kind of my part-time, I had a lot of helper jobs, and I feel like all of those jobs have kind of faded away, and I've been left to kind of work on my own projects, which is exciting and scary, and I hope they are fruitful in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it is quite a shift in terms of like where your energy is focused on, right?
Yeah, completely. And I don't think when we started, I could have predicted any of that.
Yeah, it's really wild. Is there anything for 2018 that's out there for you or thinking about like what maybe you want next year to look like?
Yeah, my favorite. I think what's most exciting for me about 2018 is knowing that I have part of a team now and that there'll be even more things that I'm not expecting coming into my orbit. So I'm excited to audition, whatever that is, and to be making connections with people on projects that I don't have a direct contact to. Like yeah. Most of the auditions so far have been people who have seen me perform, which is great and I love it. And those were also unexpected because I didn't know they were watching. But I hope that's even more so with an agent that you're getting to kind of perform for people who I'm not even on their radar. So I think that's what I'm most excited about going into 2018. And you know what? I think also going back to talking about going from helper to kind of like doing my own thing, I am excited to kind of put more of energy into the things that I've been thinking about and wanting to do all this time, but I've been using most of my energy to help other projects and really putting those on the forefront. I'm excited. I probably should be scared, but I'm just excited right now.
Yeah. Has this year, is there anything that you like feel like that examining yourself, your career, and your progress or process, you know, or evolution through a project like this has that you've learned about how you want to move forward or don't want to move forward? I guess I'm thinking specifically that like in our first conversation, you talked about how you didn't necessarily like the feeling of living without that contract.
Yeah, I feel like I'm oddly relaxed and that concerns me. But as far as actually worrying about like, I think during this process, I've realized how many times, pretty much every time I've gotten a paycheck, it's been completely unexpected. Since we started, I had no idea that it was going to happen. And it always kind of came through at the right time. So I feel like just watching that pattern of, well, I didn't know that was going to happen and it came through when I needed it, has kind of put me a little more at ease. Like, I'm not really worried about not having a contract. I'm kind of like, oh, okay. Like, when I need the money, it'll appear, it'll come, which I don't know. Maybe that just makes me sound like I've been in California too long, but. Let's hope it's a change for the better.
All right, here's my hot take.
Ooh.
I'm curious for both of your feedback on this. Attribute it to what you will. Her individual personality, her nation of origin, her gender. Marla has been the most reluctant, one of our career trackers, to put out there what she wants, to secret it. I'm going to get that. Mm. I want that. And yet, at the end of the year, spoiler alert for the next two, I think Marla's the one who got the most of what she wanted out of the year.
What is she wants to be in a writing room.
I think she wants to be a creative.
Okay.
I think if Marla was on camera, Marla's happy with that. If Marla's in a writer's room, she's happy with that. She's reluctant to say it in a very defined way. That's what I want and I'm going to go get it. But like, she booked these roles. She got in the union. She got an agent. Like, in terms of, like, progress on what is in your heart of hearts of want, I think she made the most progress of anybody this year.
Personally, like, when I listen to that, what resonates, I mean, it's like what we were talking about at the top of the show. I intended for a very long time to go into directing, and right now I'm saying that I'm creatively fulfilled producing, right? That was not intentional. And you know what? If I'd started off saying I'm going to be a producer, I would have turned that idea, I would have inflated it into such an intimidating thing that would have potentially been harder to do it. And what's so interesting and even to compare Mehdi to Marla is that Marla intended to be in a writer's room. So the writer's room is probably the scariest fucking thing. And then she just happened, not just happened, she worked very hard, but she cruised into acting roles, reoccurring acting roles. And so in some ways it's sort of like you can gas up the thing that you want so much that it might be easier to just turn, you know, turn right or turn left a little and wind up creatively fulfilled in a slightly different role.
Yeah. It just seems like she has like in the course of this year, like, look, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here right now, like I'm impressed with all four of these people.
Sure.
And the progress that they've made and their willingness to sort of like, be, you know, check in and be open about like what their wants are and to sort of like move themselves forward every 7 weeks with the knowledge that they have to come back and like talk about it mm-hmm. and analyze it in really short periods of time, you know? And like, she definitely doesn't like, she was the most reflective in this interview, I think. Mm. And it's because like, I think that like there has been a change. She was very worried, I think, at the top of this about like, how do I keep my head above water? Now, the other thing is she also had a lot of personal stuff come up this year. She had some health stuff. She had some family stuff. We checked in about that over the course of these weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, all told, not having the contract, having that life stuff come up that puts the rest of it in perspective,
sure.
She's been open to the opportunities that are coming towards her, and she's walking right through that door. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think it's, like, really impressive. And the fact that she sort of, like, put herself in that position where – representation finds her mm-hmm. is great. How many people do you know who want an agent who can't get one?
Exactly.
She's got it, and it's almost like she's like, I don't know how I did that, but it's like because she was open enough to the opportunities coming towards her and confident enough to be like, I'm just going to move forward, and I'm going to focus on like what I want to do.
And she let it be a job instead of a fantasy, which I think is very hard to do when you're going into a creative field. She had this a lot. Everybody, I imagine, on this show, everybody who's probably listening to the show has a fantasy of where they'd like to wind up. And so it's very hard to then treat that thing. All the things that we want are professions. They're things that you get paid hopefully every other week for, and then you get to have a life. And what the trick is like, how do you wind up doing something that you love? And we just happen to be unfortunate to choose creativity, which is like the least profitable and the smallest, you know, pinhole to jump through. I think that what's interesting is that like acting often seems like the most impossible thing. Really is, because there's more people trying to jump through that pinhole. And she came at it from a, oh, I guess people think I can do this and I will do it. And I have not gassed myself up so much to make this into the fantasy. You know, she might still feel a little bit, I don't know, and this is me projecting, but the writer's room might still feel like something different than acting to her. But something about this feels like she can just do the job and know already that she's validated as being good at the thing and just progressively kind of like hit the marks and get better. If
sure.
we treated all of the things that we do creatively like we treat our jobs, if you're good at doing your job, you would succeed because you would just hit those check marks and you would reflect and you would get better and you would improve. And you wouldn't invite in all of this like tall tale romantic bullshit that like makes you stay up at night, right? It's just like wake up, write a few pages, go to sleep, and if you do that 10 times, you got yourself a screenplay, you know? I mean, it's just like it's done, but we turn it into something much harder to do than that because we create like an impossible goal to yeah. fulfill.
I think it also maybe evolves, right? Because the other thing about where Marla's at as opposed to where Mehdi's at is that like Mehdi had a great 2016 from I'm not going to be a producer anymore. I'm going to go out for acting. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that guy booked, like, four commercials in a row, mm-hmm. you know? And then started booking some legit stuff. Like, he picked up there and said, oh, this is how I start to make my living this way, right? And I think that after doing that for a year, his passion started to evolve back towards, like, well, now how do I do something that's mine? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think maybe again, this is again projection towards the future, but maybe that's also the ride Marla's on now, where it's like she's not looking to drive the car on any of these projects. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Who's driving Seal? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure somebody is.
I'm sure it's like General Motors.
Yeah, but it's a procedural.
It's like
yeah, it's a procedural, military procedural on a major network. Like there is a formula.
Right.
To making that show, I am sure. That is, I'm also sure a challenge, but mm-hmm. like is what it is.
Right.
And in that circumstance, Marla Black isn't driving that ship, but she is looking to get in the door there. Mm-hmm. And she's right now going, great, I get an agent. Let's do pilot season. Let's see what else comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that like, depending on what comes back from that, she either goes, this is working, let's keep going that way, or I got a little bit of success here. Maybe see if I can have a little bit more stake mm-hmm. or let's find a project that I am driving. Or, you know, this instability of this acting world, maybe I want to try writing a little harder. Mm-hmm. And then she like pivots a little more then, right? I don't know. Those are thoughts.
Well, here's a weird metaphor, but I read Jesse Camped and Dave Holmes, so I guess weird is my thing. It's sort of like this show's Muppet Babies, and it would be interesting to see the Muppet Show because it's like we are following – it feels like you're following four wildly different humans at slightly different times in their career, but they're all trying to break in. They're just kind of at different points in their life, but we're still in like the early chapters of the novel, right? And so it's sort of interesting to think about like in the early chapters you're going to have that like romantic ideal. And you know, Marla could wind up getting Seal and then getting 10 more shows like a Seal and wind up being a totally stable working actress in Hollywood who's able to do anything she wants in life and go on vacations and enjoy life, but is pigeonholed, you know, and sorry, Marla, like I'm not trying, I'm just saying like in general, like it's pigeonholed in that like, oh, I have recurring character roles. I'm not the lead in any of these shows. These shows aren't the shows that fulfill me creatively,
right.
But I'm a working actress in Hollywood and living a life, a good life.
Sure.
And so it's sort of interesting to think about like to project years out when you're like not, it's not, it's like what do we define making it as? Because to me that's a pretty good version of making it. It's just that we have to along the way say, okay, but do I want to stop and do that passion thing that I wanted to do?
Right.
And do I have time to do that? And it does doing that mean that I throw the other thing away?
Right. Yes, and I also think that like, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, you know, it's like the last 10 months for me have been like the difference between one child and two child is ridiculous.
Sure.
And like the idea of like once, like I also think that we're talking to four people who, you know, but like Marla's married, Maddie's engaged, mm-hmm. Ben's 22. We'll get to him in a second.
Sure.
Nick's in a serious relationship, but he's still a single guy. It's like they also don't have those factors too. And it's like what you're talking about being a working actor who is, and I'm using air quotes now, pigeonholed into being a working actor.
Right, which is a great pigeonhole.
Is a great place to be for life.
Yeah.
For the rest of it.
Yeah.
For what's outside of it.
Yeah.
And
that shit's important. And so many people in this community, it's totally fine. I get it. You should have big dreams. But what you don't realize early on, you young whippersnappers, is that that shit's really important.
Yeah.
Self-care, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Truth.
Family.
Truth.
All the other stuff. And then if you're still getting to exercise that creative muscle.
Oh, that's great. That's the goal.
Holy
shit. That's the goal. That's
you can still go to the movies.
Yeah.
You can see that weird European art film and say, I wish I did that, but it's cool. You didn't. You did other great stuff and you have a family and they love you.
Yeah. I mean, I find it very hard to go see that weird European art movie right about now in my life personally. But yes, I understand. You know, I also, like, friends of mine have, like, 12-year-olds now. Oh, man, they're fucking living it up.
Oh,
they're
man.
They're like, you're cool, right? You're out with your friends? No problem. Like, I'm going out again, you know?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for those days.
Oh, it's going to be the best.
Yeah, the best. Hey, speaking of being 12 years old, let's talk about Ben Marshall. No, Ben's our 22-year-old.
23, I believe, right?
Ooh, did he turn 23?
Happy birthday.
Birthday.
Well, I might be
so
wrong.
Wonderful.
Okay.
He's 22 or 23.
I'm not sure.
And Ben, like Ben talks in terms of like encapsulating like where do you go with career and life, he's at the beginning of that,
mm-hmm.
and also has been experiencing a summer of a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
When we first started out, he had just graduated from NYU film school. He didn't know what he was going to do. He might have moved to Sydney, but he got a job in New York at Above Average. Oh, my God. He's making comedy every single day. They're working him to the bone. Week 21, we listened to him, and he sounded exhausted. And then week 28 came around, and he dropped a little bit of a bombshell on us. Let's check in. Ben Marshall, week number 28.
My residency at Above Average ended a little early. You know, it was just a business decision for them. Overall, thoughts about the experience are very, very positive. I learned a lot. I met a lot of great people. I just was very concerned about what the next step would be, just trying to get all my like reels and resumes and everything together to start setting up meetings with people and mm-hmm. figuring out what I'm going to do next. So now I'm pretty much, well, I guess I can update them that I'm working for you now.
We're messing with the science of this experiment.
Yeah. I think, like, I'm doing this gig for you guys now for a month, but I think after this month I'm going to try to take some time to, like, write a pilot I'm really proud of and, like, write a great late-night packet. You know, just, like, focus on spending time doing things that I wouldn't have had time to with a full-time job.
So the job went away.
It's gone.
4 months into an 18-month job.
Poof.
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 It's gone. Much like a lot of things in this business. The gig is here. The gig is gone. But you know what? Like, having the inside intel of this project was great because we had someone pop up and I was like, ooh, I know someone who's available. So Ben came in, worked with us for a little while, but that gig ended as well. It's a one-month gig.
Poof.
He's back out into the world. It was fun to check in with him. Let's hear what he's been up to in the 7 weeks since the above-average residency program ended. Ben Marshall's week 35.
I think the biggest development of the last 7 weeks is that me and my sketch group, Please Don't Destroy, got representation management.
Nice.
At Mosaic. Yeah, so we're super excited about that, to have that sort of support system. My old boss at Above Average, Jen Danielson, passed along, like, a packet of information about the residents to, like, one of her friends who works at Mosaic, and they happened to see, like, one video that the three of us had made together, and they really liked it, and they were going to be in town for the New York Comedy Festival since they're based in L.A., mm-hmm. And we had a meeting with them and chatted, and it went well, and yeah. I think the plan for us now is we're trying to just to write and really hone an hour-long sketch show.
Okay.
And yeah, sort of like we're continuing to try to shoot a video every month. But yeah, I mean, I feel lucky that like we're working with managers who like understand the place we're at right now, which is like we're young. We have like a lot of time and energy and we just want to like take our time to like really hone something that we're proud of mm-hmm. Before like diving into anything too crazy. I mean, I've been applying to some jobs and like I was lucky enough to like submit to a show, but yeah, I mean, I think the priority for us right now is just like focusing on what we want to create as a yeah. team.
Have you like has like what are you looking for opportunity wise right now that would be ideal in lieu of selling your own TV show?
For me right now, I'm sort of just like enjoying having a lot of time to like put energy into like my own creative projects. Obviously that'll only last so long.
Yeah. <right? laughs>
But yeah, I mean, and I think I'm just sort of like looking for like freelance sort of part-time stuff right now.
Sure.
Yeah. And just putting as much time and energy into like the Please Don't Destroy stuff as possible and like making sure I'm prepared for, you know, if opportunities come up to submit to shows, like working on late night packets and like pilots and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, you know, this is our last chat in 2017.
Oh, wow.
And I know this has also been like the first, it's not even a full year yet, but like post-college like period of time.
Yeah.
So like in terms of like when we started 35 weeks ago, and you were still at NYU to now, like, how do you feel like this year? Like, how do you sort of, like, see 2017 as a year for you?
Yeah.
And the goals that you felt like you had in mind for that year?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I haven't even really thought about it. I mean, I was thinking about how, like, crazy my trajectory has been on this podcast.
Because
It just seems to be the exact right times when it's like, oh, I have no idea what I'm going to do after college. Yeah. Okay, I'm doing this thing. Okay, that thing is gone. And then, okay, now something else good has happened,
yeah.
which is, like, getting management. But I feel good about it. I feel good about 2017. There was, like, just no way for me to predict this, like, narrative arc at all. And I definitely didn't know what to expect out of 2017. But, yeah, I mean, I feel good about it. In 2017, this is like the first year that I've started working with Martin and John at all, the guys in my sketch group.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've done we're about to do our 10th monthly show at the Pit, and like I'm just really proud of like what we've been able to accomplish in that period of time, where I feel like we're really finding a voice and sort of like really doing it. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I feel proud of like the amount of work that we've put into it in the past year.
What's your resolution for 2018, or where are you sort of like, what's the goal set going into the new year?
Yeah, I think in 2018, I really want to hone this hour with Martin and John, make it as good as we can make it. It would be super fun, something we've talked about that is like in no way tethered to reality at this point, but just something that we'd want to do is like tour it around. Like there's a theater in Philly called Good Good that we'd really want to go to. And then like, you know, we all have friends who are like in colleges, like around the East Coast, that I think it'd be super fun to take it around to places, and really workshop it with like non New York City audiences. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I think, I don't know, it's so hard to say. It'd be really fun to like write for a TV show, but I'd also be super happy to just keep Please Don't Destroy as my number one thing and like try to make something happen with those guys.
Both of those things sound very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Writing for a TV show or keeping your own thing going. I mean, he's making the best of what has been, you know what I mean? He got thrown for a loop, lost that job. Good head on his shoulders. Let's move forward. And good things are already happening.
You know what? Don't worry about Ben.
I'm not worried.
It's 22. Yeah. Don't worry about Ben. Ben has had a better 22 than all of us, is my guess, yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah.
And that's not me saying that he doesn't deserve good things. He absolutely deserves good things. But I feel like all I can think of, and maybe this is the wizened old man in me, is sort of tracking. So I mean, Sophie and I were in like 101 and 2, like mm-hmm. we were like just learning about improv together years ago, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and we just saw each other and we're like, wow, look at us, look where we're at. And you move through different chapters. And now I look back at like those moments of like setting up a practice group with Sophie and I'm like, wow, like that was such a great time. There's like the world was our oyster. Mm-hmm. We were just like, we were kind of felt like we were posing as the thing that we wanted to be, but it's exciting. We were building this muscle of understanding. Like it was just like a really fun moment. And yeah. Ben's like in that right now. And to boot, he actually has some professional interest floating around.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, he's like, I'm just working with these sketch, you know, like I'm getting to know my sketch team. It's like, oh my God, you're in the like honeymoon period of this. Of this trajectory. And that doesn't mean that's going to pay off
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
In film, often you're the new breakout filmmaker at 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like it takes a while to get there, but mm-hmm. the steps along the way are pretty wonderful. And he's like, you know, he owns New York right now. He's like living that life. So don't worry about Ben. He'll be fine.
He's fine.
Yeah, no one's worried.
Hey, don't worry about it.
He's got a good head on his shoulders. Sophie, you worked with Ben a little up close while he was in the office.
Yeah, okay, yeah. My thoughts on Ben are just, wow, you're doing it, man. I wish I had that when I was 22. Wow. Like, I wish I had, like, he's so lucky in that he knew what he wanted to do, but then worked really hard for it. And also, yeah. like, how often do you hear about, I don't know, or maybe I'm just not in the scene enough, but a sketch team just getting management.
Yeah.
Like he already has that. He had the connect from the above average thing. Like it's all kind of, even though above average, the job ending sucked, it's kind of even better to walk out of it with like these contacts, a solid networking position for yourself and management.
Absolutely.
You're good, my dude.
How many people go to internships or fellowships whatever and they're like, well, it's done. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
And then they're like, once upon a time, I had that thing.
Right.
Versus like what Ben did and what Mehdi did mm-hmm. is that they made lemons out of lemonade. They really turned a situation not by like, they were like, the other party said, this is what you have to do to succeed. And then that didn't quite work out. And they're like, but I bet if I did this, I'd also succeed. And they both won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're like gaming the system in a really smart way, which shows a level of savviness that is probably the most important kind of elixir to getting forward in the business.
I can dig it, man. You know, I think that, and I just want to point to one thing. I like the comment you made before about like you can be 40 and be that breakout star in film. Because I do feel like there was a period, and maybe this was like the difference between a few months ago and now, where you were a little bit down on like being, you know, being a little bit older, like not being the fresh face.
Let me sit down. Where's the couch? Let me lie down. I mean,
there is definitely. I mean, that's our culture in general, right? There is something about the next generation that we're obsessed with.
Sure.
And I also think that it's really like smart of Ben to be this proactive at that age, mm-hmm. because he's capitalizing on the opportunity, which is like, you know, this is a podcast, so you can't see him. But go to our our social feeds. We'll send out a picture. He's a cute young boy. You know what I mean?
Is he adorable?
He's an adorable boy.
All right.
You know what I mean? A young man, right? I don't think he has to shave but once every like 2 weeks. You know what I mean? He has that look. He looks super young. He has a good, you know what I mean? He has a good look for this business.
Nate's in love with Ben.
Yeah. No, go on.
Just because I recognize the physical traits of, you know what I mean? Like he's playing that to his benefit. All I mean to say is that like there is something in this business too about capitalizing on, you know, on what your assets are. And part of what his asset is right now and his sketch group is that they are 22 and they just came out of NYU.
And they're adorable.
They're adorable. Also, I will definitely give Ben this. He's been very self-aware this whole time.
Very.
And he always repeats how he feels lucky and grateful, and how he always repeats that he's young. Because I think he like gets that he's young.
Yeah.
He understands that.
Absolutely.
I mean, so think about. I guess what will be interesting is like, does Ben wind up writing for a TV show, starring in a TV show, starring in a thing? Or does Ben run into something similar to Marla, or, you know, I mean, like that moment of like he might be getting reps in as like the like a young, upcoming, exciting comic actor in that way. And that might actually pan out as him becoming a super kind of like knowledgeable young producer type. You know what I mean? It's like, but when that comes up, does he feel like that's him giving up on the dream, or does he feel like that's a smart kind of lateral movement?
Yeah.
And that's not saying that it might just totally work out, but I think that it's just interesting to think about, where you people catch fire at different moments, and sometimes when you catch fire, you wind up in one place, and sometimes you wind up in a totally unexpected place, and you have to be good with that. You have to be like, oh, this is a place I got here, and this is a great place to be.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All the brightness in the world in front of Ben.
Oh, sure. It's just a beautiful day.
And speaking of bright sunshine, let's go back to Los Angeles for our fourth career tracker, shall we?
Ooh.
And our good buddy Nick Stanage. And I'm very curious to get your thoughts on Nick. We saved Nick till last because I think that Nick's career and career path is probably the closest modeled towards like what you've gone through. So curious to get your reaction. When we first started this project with Nick, he had just accepted a job as the in-house head of video at SB Project, Scooter Braun's production company, where he was anticipating a high volume of directing work. This was going to be the year of directing for Nick Stanage. And the job is panning out in that he's finding fulfillment, but not necessarily in the ways that he was anticipating when he first took the job. Let's check in with how Nick was doing 7 weeks ago in week 28.
I was creative producing on a really big music video, actually, that was the biggest financially project that I've ever worked on. And it's been a lot of working on the development stuff too, but that side project of doing a short of my own to make sure it happens by the end of the year, I kind of put some safeguards in place. You know, I have a buddy of mine, Eric, staying with me. I'm going to get him moving on one of these projects. And my other friend, Stevie, I'm going to get her kind of moving on another one of these projects. And then the one I am doing myself, I'm moving on as well. So whatever one happens to be first will be the one I shoot first. It's been kind of nice to grind a little bit more and kind of feel urgency. That's the thing, is like, I feel like I'm a little worried that my director muscles atrophied a little bit. So that's another reason I'm kind of just like really want to get one of these projects going, because I just feel like I haven't been in the saddle. I've kind of done something. I did something once this year, and it was the thing that got kind of canned.
He had some setbacks. Mm. A big project that he directed, shelved. Mm. Trying to balance where does he get his fulfillment? What does this job actually look like now that he's in it? Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, not the year that he fully expected. But much like these guys, all these guys, they're looking on the bright side and they're moving forward with it. Let's check in.
Grinding it out?
He is. He's grinding it out.
It's good to be his friend. He's tossing jobs to friends,
it seems.
That's
right. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see how he's doing now at the end of the year. Week 35 with Nick Stanage.
It's funny. This year has really been, to not just recap the 7 weeks, but to recap the kind of year, it's the year of development, being a development person versus being a director. Hmm. And I think the last, you know, that's kind of been the new role I've had this year and how they balance. And I think, so I didn't end up, my whole goal was to have something to shoot. Did not achieve that goal. But I feel good about it. And here's why, is that I got to pitch a TV show for the first time ever in the fall, which was awesome.
Awesome.
That was like my first time ever, like truly pitching something that I created or co-created that, it had the opportunity to legitimately be a sold TV show. So that was really cool. And something that like a year ago or even 6 months ago, I never would have had that opportunity. I wasn't necessarily there, quote unquote, in my career yet. And it feels good to be there now. That being said, like I've done a lot more creative producing. I've done a lot more creative than actual physical directing. And I think that now I have this balance figured out a little more. And I think next year, I really do think it's going to be a year where I direct a ton of stuff, which I feel good about. The number of, when you have a full-time job, the number of weekends are limited, right? Yeah. So it really becomes a shoot on the weekend thing. And, you know, the Halloween, Thanksgiving come up, you're traveling. And then when you have that open weekend, it's like, oh, maybe you actually have a project that you need your hands on, your eyes on, that's in development at work. So it came down to a thing of the reason that none of these projects happened was twofold. One, ran out of weekends, basically. And the other thing was, you know, I have one project that I'm trying to write myself, which I mentioned before, and it's a big priority for me to do that next year for sure. But, you know, I have like three writers that I'm in discussions with right now on shorts. And, you know, it's just pre-production. It's like, I'm like, hey guys, like when you finish a script, let's, I will make this thing with you.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I think just these writers, they're all good writers. They're all people that I've met through UCB. And it's just a matter of getting, it's, you know, their self-motivation as well, right? When there's no timetable, there's no nothing on their end as well, it kind of just becomes a thing of like their life, things coming up, whether it's work or personal, and just kind of getting everybody on the same page. It's funny. I've only directed, I directed one thing really this year that didn't come out. And that's the only thing I've directed this year, really. And that's been a weird thing for me. But it's also, I still think I've become a better director just even watching other people on projects. So I've been involved in some projects as a creative producer that were bigger for me, like some pretty high budgeted music videos, some branded stuff that was, you know, all pretty like hefty things. And I, you know, just got to watch these other directors work and kind of, you know, see where they're at and see the differences I feel between myself and them, and feel pretty confident that, you know, it's not too much of a gap. And I feel like it's just a matter of the right thing coming and it being the opportunity that I need to like get back in the saddle and feeling really good about it. And so, like you said, it's been a big year, learning year. And I think, you know, I'm 33. And I think when you have those, when you're a little bit older, it starts to like weigh on you heavy than it would if I was 26.
Sure.
But even being a little older, it still feels like I'm not behind. And I have to keep reminding myself that no one cares about you more than yourself. and what I mean by that is, you know, I came to this job and my friend hired me, who knows me really well as a director, knows my work really well. But nobody at the company does. You know what I'm saying? Like nobody... I felt like I was coming into a position where it's like, great, we're going to do a lot of stuff. People are going to be excited or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's still a job where people have their own responsibilities and their own things to manage. And it was a different, we were adding a different department to this already existing company. And I think it took a little bit longer of a time for things to develop. I think I was like, okay, let's figure this out. Well, now I feel like I figured it out a little bit. And instead of being passive, I think it's all about next year. Like it's about being active. And again, like I said, no one's going to do it for you. No one's going to just give you something. Even at the company that you work on, no one's going to give you anything. And no one even necessarily knows there are people at the company that didn't even know that I'm a director. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, you're part of this thing. Oh, maybe you shoot stuff. I'm sure like a lot of directors have gotten that before. Like, oh, you shoot things, or you're a videographer. And you're like, no, man, I'm a director. It's like a huge difference. You have to even in your own companies, or even remind people what you do. And that's, you know, again, whether that's, you know, making your own stuff continually, or saying it out loud. Really, I mean, that's the thing. Don't be scared to let people know what you want.
Yeah.
Because opportunity, and when that happens, that opportunity comes, take it and do a great job. But that was the thing. I was very passive. Like, you know, I shouldn't have waited to the fall to make a project. That should have been my mindset the whole year. And it wasn't. And I think having this whole year go by where technically, you know, quote unquote, nothing got made. part of me hates that it happened. Part of me hopes it makes me hungrier. I can lean back and not do anything, or I can take this year and be like, you know what? I need to remind myself that I'm not anywhere, that even though I have this job that I really, really love, that I still have to be active. And that's really the big difference. Just make stuff, man. You know, we talk about Maureen Brucha, who's a great director who I met at on my digital team, and now she's working for Kimmel. Like, we always talk about just, can we swear on this podcast?
Hell yeah.
make cool shit. Yeah. You know, like, it's Maureen's motto, and we've talked about it a bunch of times, is make cool shit. Like, no one can ever stop you from that. And I think that's kind of the reminder that every director needs to give themselves, is like, make something. And again, if it's bad, don't put it out, right? Like, but that process of making the thing will only make you better no matter what. This whole career that we want is a long game, and it's not about breaking and then you're this thing. It's like, you have to, if you really want this, the process never ends. This has been, this self-reflection every 7 weeks has been really, really great. And I think it's something that it's made, even, like I said, this year where I haven't really had that, as much going on, like, it really caused me to think about some stuff in a positive way. And I'm really happy that it exists. So thank you, man. Thank you, everything. And dude, keep doing it next year.
All right. Thank you, dude. We kept in the plug for this concept.
I had to.
Yeah, I mean, very nice of him to say. Very nice of him to say. And as always, incredibly honest and really reflective. And thank you, Nick, for doing it. Thanks to all these guys for doing it.
Thank you.
How's it strike you, Sean? Because, again, even of what we know of you, if you're just listening to this podcast, we know there's some similarities in terms of your, you know, a career track that lines up with Nick. How does what he's sort of like reflecting on strike you as someone who's straddling the line between directing work, creative producing work, development?
Yeah, sure. You know, again, I think it's about like, what's that moment when things change a little bit from being like a fantasy or a dream thing into being a job, a day-to-day job, you know? And I think for me, what wound up happening is like being able to wake up every day and go into a place that's like 10 minutes from my front doorstep to creatively produce 8 different projects and deal with all the things, all the problems and all the joys that come your way from pitching an idea through completing a fine cut I almost feel like more lucky than most with that, because I actually get to continue to do the thing that I love so much about being like a one-man band director, or even like when I was on digital here, where you saw projects through from start to finish. To a certain extent, in the industry, you wind up often having to give up parts of those processes because you have to fulfill this job, you know. And sure, with directing, you kind of get to bring the thing all the way through. But to a certain extent, we don't all get to wind up being directors, or certainly we don't all get to wind up being the kind of directors we want to be. So I think that I do feel like I pulled the wool over somebody's eyes to allow myself to, instead of going to a job from 9 to 5 and then go out and try to make films and have a film career, to turn my 9 to 5 into that, all those needs and wants and things I want to do. I'm kind of like, oh, I have 12 more hours to every day now, and I'm still feeling creatively fulfilled.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I mean, I think it's really cool to listen to what Nick's talking about in terms of, you know, he's 33. He's like really doing a bunch of cool shit. He's getting pushed into positions where he didn't necessarily anticipate being, but he's seeing them as being kind of fulfilling in their own right. And it makes me really reflect on like how things take time, but it also happens in a shorter window of time. So when I think back on Brinkman, which is my digital team here, and I think of the people in there, it's like folks are working for the opposition, Jordan Klepper's show.
Most of them are.
Most of them are there. but others are getting Chet Siegel just got really amazing representation by way of, like, actually similar to I think it's Ben, one of those situations where she went out for one gig and actually that turned into her gang representation because people pass things around in a way that you didn't expect. It's cool to Mary is on. Yeah, I mean, like, just like all these people are doing things, and it's like if we stepped away and like looked at it, what we're all doing, and I honestly feel myself in that group. What we're all doing are things that only 3 years ago we were like, boy, it'd be cool if we wound up doing those things. And almost all, honestly, everybody has wound up in a position like that. The issue is that you think you might go to A and you wind up going to T. And you're like, oh, I didn't expect this one, but I have moved forward on the board, you know? And I think that that's really, you know, that's part of, I think that happens with every career. I just think that for whatever reason, we think that in creative careers, we kind of get a little bit more focused on that one thing instead of those 20 things.
I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting too. It's like, I also think that we are very fortunate in this project to be tracking along with four people. And maybe some of it is kind of what Nick's saying, that like being forced to face and analyze self in that way puts you in a position where you are making more proactive decisions, even if it's on a subconscious level. But like, we're definitely lucky that these four people are all open to the doors that are presenting themselves to them and seeing every door as an opportunity. Because there also is a segment of personality type in this business that is, you know, is rigid or is single-minded or is sort of like, or can find themselves to become stagnant, that can find themselves to be in a position where they're like, where they get embittered by a lack of progress or a lack of opportunity, and then it sort of manifests. You know, like it just sort of, that cycle sort of continues where it's like, I'm mad that there's no opportunity, and then there's no opportunity, and then I'm mad, and then there's no opportunity, and then I'm mad. I think that also can happen. And but part of that to me is about what you're not recognizing is, how do I look at myself and say, what's not working here? Strip that part away, or like look at the opportunities do come in and go, let's just do that well. And then let's worry about the bigger picture later.
And let yourself be more things. You know what I mean? Give yourself a better probability. So if you go out there and you, if you know, and that being said, there are people who, Mehdi or whomever could just say, you know, no to absolutely everything that isn't the one thing that he wants. And you know what? That might be the fastest track to get to be that one thing. But then you're placing a bet that says it's that thing or nothing. And then you got to live with nothing in that game. And that's okay. Like, play the game how you want to, but be aware that, like, you're placing bets. So if you wind up kind of saying, okay, well, if I could be a multitude of things and that would satisfy me, and then you kind of, like, have a better chance of winding up there, right? Because you have sort of a bigger hole to get through.
Yeah, I think that's the trick. Yeah, and I think that, like, and also, like, what I hear from Nick, too, is sort of, like, that idea that's, like, I'm not satisfied yet. He's not there. This job is good. He's recognizing what's good about it. He's been, you know, he's been frustrated there too. We've heard it on this show. There's been frustration in what has happened in the last year at that position. He's recognized where he needs to sort of place that job in who he is overall. And I think, as opposed to what you're saying, which is that you've triangulated how to make the 9-to-5 the passion thing, so that you can have the weekend to go live your life.
Live that life.
Which is great.
Self-care is important.
And what he's recognized that right now, that's not where he's at. Yes, this thing is good, like the development, like the learning, like the creative producing, like that. But my weekends still need to have a little bit of me in them. And I need to go get that thing because it's not, that triangle hasn't been fully like formed yet to like get to the place where I can put it down because it's Saturday and I just want to go to the fucking farmer's market. You know what I mean? Because I was creatively fulfilled all week.
It's a great place to be.
Have you ever been to the Tarrytown Farmers Market?
I have.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah? I'll have to come check
Shout
it
out.
Shout
out to Tarrytown.
I mean, you know, it's also like, what is hunger? And be aware that, like, by giving yourself the weekend off, you don't necessarily say, I'm not hungry anymore. It's
no,
like,
that's
you have
true,
to,
too.
You just have to think about, like, I don't know. I guess two things. One is maybe less related. But firstly, like, think about, you know, go decade by decade and think about people who are still hungry in a certain way and think about where they are in terms of, like, yeah, living a good life.
Yeah.
And so you can be 40 and hungry, you can be 50 and hungry, right? But what you want to be is, like, 50 and hungry and happy, you know? And you have to, like, think about that stuff that, like, in your early 20s, it's like, it's all social. You're not living in a place for more than a year or so. You're not, you know, you're spending your money in a way that you didn't mean to last night and all that stuff, right? So you're kind of like, just floating along. But yeah, eventually you have to find a way to say, like, oh, I'm getting older and I need to kind of make choices that starts to build something.
Yes.
And that thing that you build should still be creatively fulfilling.
Yeah.
But it just might not, you know, you can still stay hungry for the other thing. The other thing that I just want to, like, bring up, that maybe this is like a non sequitur, but instead of focusing on moving up, and instead of thinking about those people that are a step or two above, quote-unquote, above you or further in their careers, that you're kind of like, I wish I could be like so-and-so who got that writer's gig in that writer's room or a directing gig in that thing. People could gain a lot more by thinking laterally. Because what happens is that those people who are like two steps in front of you are not – you're not going to meet those people along the way. Mm-hmm. Everybody's moving up together. Mm-hmm. And so if you really think about the people that you want to work with and how to build real relationships with those folks and how to get the best out of each other, you're all going to move, quote unquote, up together. And when you get there, that person that you're idolizing will be two steps further along. You're never going to meet them. So, like, do yourself a favor and, like, still have that, like, urge to go forward, but think more about who's around you and how it's not a competition with those people,
yeah,
but it's more like figure out who, when you're all together, you guys kind of like Voltron it up, and then you're ready to actually move forward, yeah, and you're going to be in a much better place. Jesse Camp.
I also think that that thought also helps because this industry is so volatile, and the thing that you have today, you could either not have later, or the people that you're meeting. Like, I think carrying that attitude into wherever you're at, even if you feel, ooh, I'm doing well, to remember that also helps you build relationships with, yes, people who are below you. You know what,
yeah,
I mean? So you,
absolutely,
don't get sort of cocky and ahead of yourself.
Oh, man.
Because,
like, yeah,
once again, it could all just crumble at any,
sure,
moment.
Yeah, and let yourself be excited about somebody two,
yeah,
years younger than you.
Yeah.
You're allowed, yeah, to do that. We're all just trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Like, laugh at it. I think, yeah. Yeah, no, I think,
totally,
that's a big part of it.
Absolutely. I think that's a great place to leave it for 2017.
Wow.
Right there.
Hey.
You know what I mean, guys?
Yeah, well, I know.
Thank you to you both for being here today, for joining in on this week number 35. Sean, as always, great to see you.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Sophie, a pleasure as always.
Oh, always.
Thanks to you out there for listening. This has been week number 35 of the Career Tracker on the UCB Digital Podcast. This is our last episode for 2017. In fact, on a show about career evolutions, we may as well just sort of like talk about our own. You might hear from us a little more infrequently in 2018, just because things are getting a little bit too hectic around UCB Comedy and Don't Think Productions to maintain the rigorous schedule of a weekly podcast. So we'll be checking in from time to time, but you might not hear as much from us because, oh boy, do we have some projects next year that are going to be taking up a lot of time. We're really excited about them. We want to throw ourselves at them, and we don't want to short this by just sort of mailing it in every week. So we'll come back when it's important or when there is something really to say. But thank you out there for listening. You can still subscribe, and then you'll get the new podcasts all the time. Check us out all over the social medias. Follow us at UCB Comedy, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever else comes out. It's all
UCB
Comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actually excited. We're finally going to sort of like dip our toes into VR in the new year. It's one of the things we're going to be working on. And so really excited to sort of like be able to dive into those kind of creative projects in the new year. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in. Thanks to the Career Trackers for doing this project. We'll hear more from them in the future. And until we see you guys, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Hi. Hello.
Hello, I'm Alyssa.
I'm May.
And we have a podcast called Crazy in Bed.
Crazy semicolon in bed.
Yeah, yeah, this isn't a sex podcast. We mean like we're crazy and we spend a lot of time in bed.
A lot.
Yes, we have new episodes coming out every Monday on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please,
please, please, please listen.
We need this. This is all we have. We are fragile.
We're fragile and we could relapse.
Hanging by a thread, I'd say, but there's no thread, really. No thread. Threads are too strong.